This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, Iran is claiming their testing of ballistic missiles didn't violate the ban on the testing of ballistic missiles. Texas Congressman Ted Poe, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, joined me on Wednesday with his reaction. Also, the Obama administration finally labels what is taking place in the Middle East by ISIS as genocide. While slow in coming, the declaration was welcomed on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, who authored the House Genocide Declaration, responded to the administration's announcement on Thursday. And there is a connection between the persecution of Christians abroad and the attack on religious freedom here at home. There is a growing threat to religious liberty here at home because of the policies of our own government. Earlier this week, FRC hosted a briefing for members of Congress on the First Amendment Defense Act. Two of our special guests, Chaplain Wes Motter and Dr. Everett Piper, joined me for radio. That's coming up here on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, go to @TPerkins. All right, if you didn't already know that we can't trust Iran, here's further proof. The foreign minister of Iran, Mohammad Zarif, said in a speech at the Australian National University that the Security Council resolution, that's the UN Security Council, which banned ballistic missile tests, he says, quote, it doesn't call upon Iran not to test ballistic missiles or ballistic missiles capable of delivering nuclear warheads. It calls upon Iran not to test ballistic missiles that were designed to be capable. That word took me about 7 months to negotiate, so everybody knew what it meant, end quote. On Wednesday, Texas Congressman Ted Poe joined me with his reaction to that statement.
Joining me now with his analysis on this is a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas, Congressman Ted Poe. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to talk to you, Tony.
Well, Congressman, any surprises here in what the foreign minister from Iran has to say?
Absolutely not. And he's flaunting the fact that he has deceived the world. And the Iranians are proud of this. Just to make it real clear, the Iranian deal where the administration gave away the farm and the mineral rights had nothing to do in that agreement with missiles. It's all about nuclear weapons.
Right.
And so the UN Security Council passed a resolution saying, as you have said, that they are not to develop any weapons specifically designed, missiles specifically designed to carry nuclear weapons. And that word specific is the key word. So they're going to develop missiles that can do other things, but also carry nuclear weapons.
Right.
And that is, and they're proud of that. They're proud of the fact that they worked on this word for 7 months, and now all of a sudden the administration acts shocked that they would make these missiles. And as you know, the missiles, two of the missiles that they fired off, and I think in violation of the UN resolution, had in Hebrew, death to Israel. So their intentions are quite clear, and why the West, and specifically the U.S. government, has been ignorant of their goal to destroy Israel, destroy the United States. They are in violation of this U.N. resolution, even our State Department says they are. But there's not going to be a reaction, and then the reaction is not going to happen for several reasons. I mean, there's not going to be anything we're going to do because the Security Council, it can be, you know, has to be unanimous for the Security Council to do anything, and so there will be a veto, of course, by the Russians who say that they didn't violate any UN resolution.
Well, now Secretary John Kerry said that this could invite additional sanctions. That's a joke. Now, let me give a little context here, so folks know when you talk about the UN Security Council Resolution 2231, which is what we're talking about here, that complemented the nuclear deal. I mean, that was a part of the backdrop to this, so that they would not be able to develop these ICBM missiles in order to deliver any type of nuclear warhead. Now, it's an interesting aspect on the Russian point, that the Russians have said, oh, we don't see any violations here. We see this perfectly fine. Well, the Russians are also getting $8 billion in transactions for war material. I mean, they're selling military equipment to Iran. Most probably that $8 billion is coming out of the $100, $150 billion that we released to them.
Well, that's exactly correct. And it's already a requirement that Iran not develop its conventional weapon arms sales, specifically arms sales. And they're doing it. They're buying the Russian. They're buying weapons from the Russians. So the Russians are in on the development of the military complex of Iran, both conventionally. They're not going to do anything, and there's not going to be any sanctions. And part of the problem with sanctions is that we have pulled back the sanctions. We have revoked the sanctions against Iran. And if the U.S. was to try to sanction Iran, it would be a unilateral thing. It would not be with any other country that's already released their sanctions. So they would have basically no effect on stopping Iran. So you got Iran working with the Russians on conventional weapons. You got Iran, in my opinion, working with North Korea on the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles. And meanwhile, the United States is blissfully ignorant of their total goal, which is to develop weapons to destroy both Israel and the United States.
Congressman Ted Poe, we're just less than 45 seconds left, but do you see under any scenario where this works out good for the United States of America and Israel?
No, it will not work out well for the United States or Israel. It keeps Iran on its goal that the Ayatollah has always said to destroy us and Israel. And they are flaunting the fact that they are doing that. They are developing missiles, I believe, with the North Koreans. And, of course, eventually they will be certified to have nuclear weapons at some time within 10 to 15 years. So it doesn't play well for the United States. We really have made a tremendous mistake with the Iranian deal and, of course, the allowing of these missiles to be developed.
Again, that was Congressman Ted Poe of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, good news this week. The administration finally announcing that they see what is happening in the Middle East by ISIS for what it is, genocide. Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry is here after we return from the break. Don't go away. We're back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with the Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, and religious liberty. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. To learn more and apply, visit frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can sign up for our alerts and daily updates. Just go to TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. Well, some good news out of Washington this week. After dragging their feet for quite some time, the Obama administration finally declaring what was happening in the Middle East to Christians and other religious minorities, genocide. Secretary of State John Kerry on Thursday making that announcement. Here's what he had to say, and then we're going to hear from Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, who led the charge on Capitol Hill to get Congress to speak out on this issue.
My purpose in appearing before you today is to assert that in my judgment, Daesh is responsible for genocide against groups in areas under its control, including Yazidis, Christians, and Shia Muslims. Daesh is genocidal by self-proclamation, by ideology, and by actions. We know, for example, that in August of 2014, Daesh killed hundreds of Yazidi men and older women in the town of Kochel and trapped tens of thousands of Yazidis on Mount Sinjar without allowing access to food, water, or medical care. Without our intervention, it was clear those people would have been slaughtered. Our goal, after all, is not just to defeat Daesh, only to find that in a few years, some new terrorist group with a different acronym has taken its place. Our purpose is to marginalize and defeat violent extremists once and for all. And the determination to act against genocide, against ethnic cleansing, against the other crimes against humanity, must be pronounced among decent people all across the globe.
Well, joining me now with a congressional reaction to today's announcement by the Secretary of State is the sponsor of the House Genocide Declaration Bill that passed earlier in the week. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Nebraska, Congressman Jeff Fortenberry. Jeff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks so much for your ongoing interest in this essential issue. I'm very grateful.
Well, you're absolutely welcome. Appreciate the leadership role that you have taken in this. Surprised today that even though the State Department hinted they might miss the deadline, that the Secretary stepped out today and made this declaration?
Yes, I was surprised, very surprised early this morning when I started to get some notification that the State Department was going to make the announcement. Last evening, we heard that they had hesitated and needed more time. The congressionally mandated deadline was today. That was very disheartening. You know what this is about. This is about trying to stop the horrific injustice that's happening to Christians and Yazidis and others in the Middle East. It is about an assault on human dignity and really the underlying principles of civilization itself. It was unclear why the State Department was hesitant to call this genocide. The facts are clear. The International Association of Genocide Scholars had called it such. Our own International Commission on Religious Freedom, which is in the State Department, had named it as such. Pope Francis, presidential candidates on both sides of the aisle, as well as the European Parliament. And then earlier this week, we had a unanimous vote in Congress to declare what is happening to the ancient faith traditions a genocide. When you have one group of people, ISIS, systematically trying to exterminate others, you cannot sit idly by. There was a scandal of not only indifference, but a scandal of silence. And so I want to put all of the past hesitation behind us. I'm grateful to Secretary Kerry for making this determination. I had interaction with him several weeks ago when he was before my committee, and I urged and pleaded with him and knew that he had sympathies in this regard. But he put aside any paralysis that existed within the State Department and made the call, and it's the right thing to do. The United States has now spoken with clarity and moral authority.
I'm in Delaware today. I was actually speaking to a group, about 600 pastors and church leaders here in Delaware, and I mentioned that the administration finally making this recognition, this declaration of what's happening in the Middle East to Christians is genocide, and certainly there were cheers that we've come along with the rest of the Western world. But one of the questions that many of these pastors have is now, what does this mean going forward? What will the United States government do to help these persecuted believers?
Well, the first thing it does is, again, elevate international consciousness as to the grave injustice that is happening there. Tony, when is the last time you had a conversation about the Christian tradition in the Middle East, the Yazidi faith community, other religious traditions that once made up a rich tapestry of religious diversity in the Middle East and were actually essential toward its stability? This hasn't happened, and yet today, with the pronouncement of the genocide designation, suddenly this set of considerations becomes a part of the ongoing policy deliberations that must take place. It sets the preconditions, I believe, for the future reintegration of these ancient traditions back into their ancestral homeland. It also has certain implications for prioritization of migration when that's necessary. And then from my perspective, we ought to further pursue policy goals such as safe havens in northern Iraq as well as northern Syria, so that people who are having to continue to flee from the injustice are positioned near their ancient land when there is a proper security settlement and they can be returned and reintegrated back into their societies. That's the deep meaning of this. Now, Colin Powell came, when he was Secretary of State in 2004, he came to the United States Congress and declared what was happening in Darfur to be genocide. And that helped put a stop to this grim reality. So it serves as a gateway and a platform for further policy consideration. But when the United States House of Representatives earlier this week spoke unanimously, not a single person voted no, It gave rise, at least I'm hopeful that it will continue to give rise to not just international consciousness, but a compulsion for action among the responsible nations of the world who we must join with. We can help lead, but others must join with us to put an end to the grotesque persecution of Christians and Yazidis and others.
That was my conversation with Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry after the Secretary of State John Kerry declaring what was taking place in the Middle East against Christians and other religious minorities as genocide. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, religious liberty here at home is critical to defending religious liberty abroad. In fact, you could say very clearly, I believe, that as we see increasing threats to religious liberty at home and a government that is doing it, that sends a message to tyrants and terrorists abroad that religious liberty is not important to America and it puts Christians at risk. When we return, we'll be talking about the First Amendment Defense Act with two special guests who'll join me in studio. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom in America. Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us this weekend. The website, as always, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, earlier this week, FRC held a briefing for members of Congress on Capitol Hill. We do this periodically on issues of importance. This time, it was on the First Amendment Defense Act. Now, this is an issue that we've talked quite a bit about. Since the court's redefinition of marriage, we've seen Americans, business owners, individuals, others, fire chiefs, you name it, they have had their freedom, their religious freedom, attacked simply because of their view on marriage. Well, earlier this week, after we had the briefing, I brought two of our special guests, along with David Christensen, who is our Vice President for Governmental Affairs here at FRC. I brought them into studio to talk more about the First Amendment Defense Act and why it's necessary. Joining me in that conversation was Dr. Everett Piper, who is the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, and Chaplain Wes Motter, a military chaplain. He was in on the conversation as well. Well, let me first, David, before I get into our discussion with Dr. Piper and Dr. Motter, what is FATA?
FATA is a bill that essentially provides conscience protections against federal government discrimination for people who believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. People may be familiar of a number of conscience laws related to abortion that have become law over the years. The federal government cannot force doctors or nurses or hospitals to perform abortion. There are, however, no laws on the books saying that the government, the federal government, may not punish somebody through revoking tax-exempt status, fines, penalties, accreditation, licensing, because an entity, a university, or a business, or an individual believes marriage is between a man and a woman. So FATA is really simple. It simply says the federal government may not discriminate in those ways against people because they believe marriage is between a man and a woman. It doesn't change the definition of marriage. It doesn't deny benefits to anybody who may be in a same-sex marriage in the wake of the Obergefell ruling. It just simply says the government may not punish people who still believe marriage is between
a man and a woman. So it simply keeps the federal government from penalizing people because they believe marriage is the union of a man and a woman.
Exactly.
All right. Now, Dr. Piper, this is an issue for education, and it shouldn't take us by surprise because the Solicitor General, in arguing for the overturn of marriage, was asked this question by Justice Alito, where this might lead when it comes to the tax exemption of universities. And so this is of particular interest to you.
Absolutely. Oklahoma Wesleyan is a Christian liberal arts university owned and operated by the Wesleyan Church. We have our theological discipline and doctrine, which is very clear. It's biblical. It's a biblical worldview. So the question for those listeners right now is this: should a Christian college have the liberty, the intellectual liberty, and the academic freedom, the religious freedom, to discuss and debate, promote and perpetuate a biblical worldview when it comes to morality? Or should we be under the threat and under the fear of some sort of government penalty if we express an unpopular idea, an idea that's out of order with the federal government's definition of religion, which I thought the First Amendment prohibited them from declaring?
Well, yes, I think you're right on that point. But I want to go to the issue of, is this realistic that the government would actually come after an institution and penalize it for its views on marriage? I'm saying that because this is not theoretical. You're already involved in a case before the United States Supreme Court on an issue of the exercise of religious freedom.
Actually, I'll give you two examples. Next Wednesday, before the Supreme Court, Oklahoma Wesleyan will have its case heard where we have sued HHS, the Obama administration, with regard to the Affordable Care Act's mandate for abortifacient drugs. In other words, we're saying that we will not participate in the taking of innocent human life, and that our women are smart enough to choose their own health care, thank you, and that the pro-life women at Oklahoma Wesleyan University don't want, nor will they ever use, abortion-inducing drugs. We're suing, and our case will be heard with the Little Sisters of the Poor next week. That's case number one, where our religious freedom is being challenged and compromised. Case number two is just this year, the Department of Education sent us a letter whereby they told us that Title IX had been redefined, where we now had to comply with providing transgender accommodations on our campus. In other words, a biological male could avail himself of a woman's shower, a woman's dorm, or a woman's sports team. Now, I ask you this, Tony. How is it compliant with Title IX to deny that a woman is a biological, ontological fact, that she exists, and that rather than her being a physical fact, that a woman is only a fantasy and a feeling, and that anytime anyone has that fantasy or feeling, they can declare they're a woman and then impede and intrude upon the woman's rights to a shower, to a bathroom, or to a soccer team? We said no, and we appealed that, and fortunately, through the assistance of the Alliance Defending Freedom, we prevailed in that particular appeal. But what happens the next time?
Right, and the fact that you didn't have to go through that process, the painstaking effort to do that. Look, it is very clear, and this is a religious institution. I mean, you get off into non-religious institutions and they're toast under this administration and these policies.
Right. We were granted the exemption this time because a bureaucrat decided to give us the liberty to practice our faith.
Right.
That's a frightening position for us to be put in.
Crazy. This is not just an issue for institutions. It's an issue for individuals as well. We've even seen chaplains, and you hear me talking about this quite a bit. And one of the chaplains we were talking about some time back is Chaplain Wes Motter. Dr. Motter, again, thank you for being here today. This is an issue that is not just a threat to institutions, but it's to individuals who are operating within the context of the teachings of their faith.
That's right, Tony. Yeah, and I'm glad to say that I have been exonerated. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm still serving as a chaplain, and it is important.
Religion. But it was questionable at a time because you were literally removed from your post because you counseled based upon biblical teaching.
That's
on
right.
Marriage and sexuality.
That's right. I'm an Assemblies of God ordained minister, and you know, we're caring for all people who have diverse backgrounds and belief systems, and I think it's important for every military chaplain to be able to operate as their conscience dictates, as their religious organization.
Isn't that the purpose of a chaplain?
It is.
To provide guidance based upon biblical teaching?
That's right. It is. And all chaplains, the military needs chaplains. They're deploying, they're serving their country, families are separated. And one of the things that we don't want to be doing is looking behind our back, how I pray or how I end a prayer or in my counseling according to, policies and plans. I think every chaplain wants to do the right thing. I believe that we want to do the right thing, but What I don't want to do is, you know, violate my own conscience and my worldview on family and faith. I want to be able to be who, you know, God has made me to be as an ordained minister, as I minister to our military men and women.
Do you sense that there is an effort to try to silence those who hold these views simply by making targets out of them and making examples like in your case?
I think that, you know, I don't know if I could ever prove that, but I do believe that, you know, to come into alignment, to come into compliance with mm-hmm. tolerance and diversity and equality, and, you know, I believe chaplains have been taking care of people. I have, you know, gay, lesbian people, atheist, agnostic people. You know, it's not for me to necessarily endorse someone's belief system, but I think my role is to show compassion and care and to let them and remind them of who God believes they are and the value that how God sees a person. You know, that's my role and function is to care for people like that. But as far as targeting, you know, I think that I was, you know, if I reflect back on my particular case, I don't know that all the motives were where they needed to be.
Dr. Piper, where are the other voices? I mean, this is not just an issue with Oklahoma Wesleyan University. I know there's some other college presidents, but there's a fear of standing up and speaking truth.
There is, and I'll give you one example as to why that fear is legitimate. The Human Rights Campaign has cited those institutions like Oklahoma Wesleyan that did appeal the Department of Education ruling on Title IX and requested that exemption that I just referred to. The Human Rights Campaign has asked the federal government to out those institutions and put them on a public list so that we would be embarrassed because we asked for that appeal.
You've been listening to a conversation with two of our special guests, along with David Christensen, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council, Dr. Wes Motter and Dr. Everett Piper, talking about the need for the First Amendment Defense Act. To find out more about that, go to the website tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. Also, while you're there, be sure and sign up for our alerts. That way, you'll know when to act and what to do by signing up for our alerts. That comes to you when needed on issues dealing with faith, family, and freedom. Well, we're out of time for this weekend. I want to thank you for joining us. I do encourage you to tune in for our daily broadcast, 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. To find out more, you can look at the details at tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.